The Week in Philly on KYW News Radio is recorded and edited every Friday afternoon. For the latest updates to any of the stories you're about to hear, listen to KYW News Radio anytime on your smart speaker or the Odyssey or iHeartRadio apps. Visit KYWNewsRadio.com or follow us on social media at KYW News Radio.
This is The Week in Philly from KYW News Radio. Sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love.
Welcome to our weekly look at the stories that have been making headlines in Philadelphia and the region. My name is Matt Leon, and over the next hour, we will bring in KYW News Radio reporters to break down the stories you have been talking about. Residents in Limerick, Montgomery County voiced their opposition to plans to build a data center in their area.
They were holding signs like "no data centers here," "reject all data centers."
Vic Ragyapathy will have that story. Then we will talk with Pat Loeb about the race to replace Dwight Evans in Congress. The primary is Tuesday.
There have been some shifting dynamics.
SEPTA holding public budget hearings minus the drama of the past couple of years.
No service cuts are planned. No fare increases are expected.
Mike DiNardo will have the details. The 76ers move on from president of basketball operations Daryl Morey after another playoff flameout.
Morey didn't do enough to make the team stronger.
Tim Jimenez will talk about the move. Then Justin Udo tells us how golf fans have descended on Delaware County for this weekend's PGA Championship at Aronimink.
It really is bringing in a lot of money for the county.
And then Sharaday Howard will give us all the details about next month's Odunde Festival in the city.
It's pretty much the biggest thing you can get when it comes to street festivals.
All that is ahead over the next hour. I hope you'll join us for The Week in Philly from KYW News Radio, and we will get started right after this.
Nobody's sitting here like, yay, I can't wait to get a data center.
The data center is not for the community. That is for people who are building it to get richer.
It's taking away jobs. It doesn't build jobs. The very purpose of these buildings is to delete human labor.
We start this edition of The Week in Philly with the continued fight against data centers. Now, we have seen communities everywhere pretty universally standing up to reject having one of these huge data centers built in their area. Now, on Monday night, one of the fronts in that fight was in Montgomery County, where residents in Limerick spoke out against a proposed center there. For more, let's bring in KYW's Vic Ragyapathy. Vic, tell us more about this meeting Monday night and who wants to build this center.
Yeah, so this is a company called MCD7. They have this tract of land that has been approved for a warehouse, I believe. Essentially, they're trying to get it more or less rezoned, or at least like allowed by the Township Board of Supervisors to, instead of a warehouse, be a data center that consists of 8 two-story tall buildings, all with, you know, chillers on them. And it's a large campus. They've got it all mapped out with like retention ponds and things like that. And, you know, electrical substation for the, you know, PECO substation for them, situated between the Philadelphia Premium Outlets and Outlet Mall in Limerick and Clean Energy Center.
At this meeting, was the crowd, people that turned out almost universally against the data center, was anyone there in favor of it?
Certainly no one I spoke to was. Pretty much everyone that turned out, and these were residents, people from Limerick, nearby places, Linfield, Pottstown even, and even people that came a decent ways away, like spoke to one person who came from Narberth just out of solidarity. An hour before the meeting, or should I say the hearing, there were a couple dozen people that came out. They showed up. They were dressed in red, and they were holding signs like "no data centers here," "reject all data centers," the environmental impact. There were actually so many people that came to the meeting that they had to have an overflow room as well. And by my read, it was at the very least overwhelmingly against the data center, if not unanimously.
Did everything kind of coalesce around the same few arguments, or did you hear a wide variety in addition to what you mentioned earlier of why people were concerned?
Yeah, I think it's a few things. I think there are some practical sort of like homeowner concerns. What's this going to do to my energy bill? What's this going to do to my property value? What kind of noise am I going to be hearing all throughout the day if you've got all these, you know, cooling towers, these chillers that are on top of the buildings that emit a certain amount of noise? It's an eyesore. It doesn't do anything for the community. People have a lot of environmental concerns. It uses so much water. A lot of people are like, well, where are you going to get the water from? How are you going to divert the water? I think a lot of them were also concerned that this company is essentially just trying to sort of like rush through this process or get it in sort of under the radar. A lot of these people are anti-AI in general, not knowing what it'll be used for. So I think there are a wide variety of concerns here for residents.
So this hearing, what kind of was the setup? This wasn't like a vote or like open hearing, right?
No result or outcome really came out of this event on Monday night. This was actually the continuation of an ongoing hearing that functions essentially just like a regular trial, just that the bench that's hearing it is the Board of Supervisors, and you've got the company and their counsel on one side, and then you've got anyone who's requested to be a party on the other side. So these are residents who are represented by various lawyers. Just on Monday night, there was one witness who was brought forth by the company, and that witness is the project manager. And so they were questioned by the company's lawyers, and then they were cross-examined by people who were either citizens who were representing themselves or lawyers who were representing citizens concerned about this. And so that's all they got through. It was just one witness, and there are going to be more, and it's going to be a long, drawn out, even probably months long process. And the next hearing isn't even until June 16th. This is a process that's not even close to being concluded.
All right. Thank you very much, Vic. That's KYW's Vic Ragyapathy joining us. And we are just getting started on this edition of The Week in Philly. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to The Week in Philly. And as per the usual, there's lots to talk about with our City Hall Bureau Chief, Pat Loeb. So let's bring her in now. And first off, Pennsylvania primary day is Tuesday. Most of the attention around here focused on the race to replace Dwight Evans in Congress, Pennsylvania's 3rd congressional district. Now, the Democratic primary, which for all intents and purposes will decide who eventually does go to Congress, is a three-way race. Pat, we really dug into this race a couple of weeks ago, but as we come down the stretch here, how would you categorize the state of play?
Well, there have been some shifting dynamics since we last spoke, for sure. There's been no independent polling in this race, but the ProScience PAC 314, which is backing Dr. Ayla Stanford in the race, did a poll in early April that showed her in the lead, State Rep Chris Robb second, and Senator Sharif Street third. Again, this is not an independent poll. 314 is backing Stanford, but once it came out, she became a target. Robb really went after her. He's outspokenly pro-Palestinian, and he accused 314, and by association Dr. Stanford, of being funded by the Israel PAC APAC. And 314 issued a heated denial and demanded that Robb apologize to Stanford. He has not. Then Stanford dropped out of a debate with Robb and Street, citing misogynistic attacks and lies from them. So this is clearly knocking her off kilter. But I stick by what I said the last time we talked about this.
And that is that you thought it would come down to turnout, and you still think that's going to be the key to victory in this one?
Yes. This race is at the top of the ticket in Philadelphia, but this is also the election for ward leaders and committee people. So if Dr. Stanford or Rep. Robb can ignite their voters, get them to the polls in large numbers, either one of them could win. But Senator Street has the party backing. And if turnout is low and you get only the party faithful and it becomes what they call a committee man's election because voters just take their committee person's advice on how to vote, I give the race to Street. But we will know soon enough.
Now, you also did a story this week about preparations for what is expected to be a very busy summer here in Philadelphia. And specifically, you focused on the work at the President's House on Independence Mall. What are they doing?
It's getting all spruced up, power washing for the bricks, cleaning the walls and the glass, painting, weeding. It's getting attention it hasn't had since it opened, really.
That hasn't been power washed, I don't think, since it was created. They're out there cleaning all of the black algae that has formed on the brickwork.
Now, the president's house, of course, has been awash in controversy after the Trump administration ordered displays focusing on slavery at the house removed. This ended up in court. We've gone round and round. As we head towards this busy summer, Pat, what is the status of the slavery display?
Well, it's only halfway up. A judge ordered it restored, but before that work was done, the Trump administration appealed, and the Third Circuit said, just leave it as it is right now, and we'll decide what happens next. So that case is in the motions process. But it's a different kind of exhibit now. It was history. Now it's history in the making, and people are posting signs and notes where the non-restored panels used to be, and visitors are invited to post their own thoughts. There are even pens nearby that you can write on the posters with. The effort to censor it has maybe had a boomerang effect, and now it's more interesting to visitors, and it's certainly more interactive.
You also had a story recently about a program that combines green energy policy with economic development. It's a program that was actually implemented a decade ago. And this week we got a status report, and it sounds like it's been wildly successful. What is this program and what are the details of its success?
Yes, the Philadelphia Energy Campaign was started by then Council President Darrell Clark, and he said it was going to create 10,000 jobs and draw $1 billion in investment to the city.
I'm extremely pleased that after standing on that stage at the inauguration and promising 10,000 jobs, and people thought I was crazy, that we've actually achieved that goal.
In fact, it created more than 11,000 jobs, and it leveraged $1.3 billion in investments. There were all kinds of programs, Built to Last, which does energy-saving home repair, so like leaky windows, doors, old roofs, does solar panel installation, and it built a solar farm, which provides 25% of the energy the city uses in its buildings. And they've all been made more energy efficient. So it's more than $1 billion when you add up the payroll taxes on those new jobs and the savings to the city.
All right. Thank you very much, Pat. KYW City Hall Bureau Chief Pat Loeb joining us. Time for a break. We will have more of the Week in Philly in just a few minutes. It's the Week in Philly, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love.
No service cuts, no fare increases this year. Definitely a different tenor from last year.
We continue on this edition of the Week in Philly. And this past week, riders had the chance to sound off on SEPTA's proposed budget for the 2027 fiscal year. For more on this, let's bring in KYW's Mike DiNardo. And Mike, first off, the budget proposal itself has gone largely unnoticed compared to the last few years, when it always felt like we were about a week or 10 days away from fiscal disaster for the transit agency. So why has this been so quiet? And give us the details of this budget.
Yeah, you'll remember a year ago when Governor Shapiro approved that $400 million transfer of state capital funds to SEPTA to pay for 2 years of operations. The year starting July 1st would be the second fiscal year for that operating money. So for the coming year, SEPTA doesn't have to wring its hands over how it's going to have enough money to operate. So no service cuts are planned, no fare increases are expected for the coming year. But of course, all eyes are going to be on Harrisburg to see if the governor and the legislature can come up with a permanent funding solution for mass transit.
So with regards to what riders are sounding off on, what are their concerns and suggestions for this budget?
There was a lot less drama, less public input also this year, but riders still had concerns. One mentioned the Metro designation, changing the names of trolley lines from numbers to letters. The electronic signs on trolleys right now are switching. They're alternating between the Route 10 and the T1, for example. And one rider said, it's time to stop the switching because it's confusing. Now, another restaurant worker wanted trolley lines to run past 10 p.m. Right now, the trolley tunnel is closing for overnight maintenance.
That's something that a lot of West Philadelphians have struggled with.
Others wanted extended hours for regional rail service. SEPTA also held public hearings on its capital budget. The transit agency plans to start buying more buses to replace its fleet starting next year. And that capital budget dedicates money to replace trolley cars, L cars, and regional rail cars. And that capital program, though, Matt, relies on borrowed money to pay for these long-term replacements.
So what is the timeline for the budget going forward?
The SEPTA board is scheduled to consider the budget at its June meeting, and it would take effect on July 1st.
Now, also this week, Mike, you covered a hearing in city council focusing on driverless rideshare cars in the city. Right now, that means Waymo, right?
Right. Since last summer, Waymo has been testing driverless cars with humans on board in Philadelphia. Those vehicles have been creating virtual maps of city streets to help the cars navigate on their own. Now, Waymo operates driverless rideshare service right now in 11 cities, including San Francisco, LA, and Atlanta. The company has plans to add Philadelphia and Pittsburgh to that list, although not until after the semiquincentennial events this summer at the earliest.
So mention it was a hearing in city council. Like, what role does city council have when it comes to regulating something like this?
Well, technically, none. Waymo is operating under a 2022 law signed by Governor Wolf allowing autonomous vehicles to operate in Pennsylvania. That law makes PennDOT the only regulator in the state. So city council really has no say when it comes to putting guardrails on this service.
But it didn't stop them from asking questions. So what were they asking this week, and were they getting answers that satisfied them?
Yeah. They asked questions that you might expect. How safe and reliable are ride shares without human drivers? Will this take ride share jobs away from people who need them most? And would the city be able to require Waymo to invest a certain amount of money, like a community benefits agreement, in order to operate? Engineering professors also testified of instances where autonomous cars would stop because they were confused by a puddle in the road, or they stopped on rail tracks when there was an oncoming train. Council heard this testimony, but they got no direct answers from Waymo. The company was invited to testify at the hearing, but didn't send a representative. Instead, Waymo submitted its testimony in writing. And that didn't sit well with council member Rue Landau.
You got all these workers here who might be out of a job, who might get cut wages. You've got all of us who have very serious questions to ask, and Waymo is not here to answer.
A Waymo spokesperson in a statement to KYW News Radio said the company does plan to invest tens of millions of dollars to support its Philadelphia service, adding that Waymo's technology is involved in 92% fewer collisions that cause injuries than those driven by humans.
So what is next here?
Well, PennDOT does have the final say. The company hasn't said when it would begin service here, but again, a representative from the City Office of Transportation and Infrastructure testified that Waymo wasn't expected to begin service until after this summer. Council, though, would like to see things slow down because they have plenty of questions.
All right. Thank you very much, Mike. KYW's Mike DiNardo joining us. Time for another break. We will have more of this edition of The Week in Philly right after this. The Week in Philly from KYW News Radio is sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers, proud sponsor of the KYW News Radio studios. Bring on the fun and bring home a new Honda with a great deal on your favorite Honda vehicles and finally take that road trip you've been dreaming of. Now's the time to check out the Honda Civic at HRV from Honda, the 2025 Kelley Blue Book's KBB.com best value brand.
Tuesday was a difficult day for me. I consider Daryl Morey a friend.
I'm not going to disparage Daryl here today. I think he did a fine job, and I think he's a good person.
All I can tell you is that I'm sweating it really hard. I'm sweating it just as hard or harder than it, as any of the fans.
I view these things as great challenges. These are great responsibilities to be in these chairs, but also not easy, and I know we have challenges ahead.
Welcome back to The Week in Philly. The 76ers season flamed out in spectacular fashion in the second round of the NBA playoffs. Tuesday, President of Basketball Operations Daryl Morey was shown the door after six seasons. Let's break all this down now with our resident 76ers fan, KYW's Tim Jimenez. And Tim, first off, were you surprised by the move?
Not too surprised, Matt, because there was just so much backlash after the way the season ended because of the drubbing that the Knicks gave to them. You could see they were outmanned. They just did not have enough. They ran out of gas because I think Coach Nick Nurse had very few options in the playoffs. The bench was just not a factor because they just didn't have enough firepower. They couldn't shoot well, and there was just not enough. And I think it's really a roster construction type of issue. That's why they got to the point where they did, losing so badly to the Knicks.
It was only a week earlier that you had people in the Broad Street Run wearing Embiid jerseys, and there was a energy and everybody was excited. And it is so amazing how quickly that excitement was set on fire in just a week, huh?
It was so exciting to beat the Celtics because it's been, what, 40 some years since when the franchises have met in the playoffs that the Sixers actually won a series. And during this entire process era, that Celtics team that they beat was the best team they actually beat in the playoffs, the only true contender they got past in the playoffs since Embiid has been around. So, of course, there was all this euphoria, but then it turned so quickly because it felt like there was very little life the Sixers had in them against the Knicks. So that really left such a sour taste in so many people's mouths.
So Daryl Morey was in charge for 6 years. When you look back at his tenure, what were the biggest mistakes from your vantage point that eventually led to his ouster?
I would say not doing enough to really make the team strong enough to truly contend. When you had a peak Embiid, we're talking about the 2021 and 2023 seasons. Joel was MVP form, and in 23 he actually won MVP. You just didn't do enough to put the right pieces around him. And 2023, when they had James Harden, which I thought was the best shot to actually advance and potentially win, you had Harden, you had Embiid, you had Maxey. Things were really clicking, but you didn't add enough. So, you know, those are the two best shots they actually had in competing, and he didn't do enough. Now, whether that came from ownership in terms of ducking the tax or whatever the case may be, but they just didn't do enough. Morey didn't do enough to make the team strong.
And I think the trading of Jared McCain at the deadline this year and not adding anyone at the deadline, specifically getting rid of McCain, is going to haunt this franchise for a decade.
Yes, I had a lot of high hopes for McCain. I thought he really had that cliche, you had that dog in him, but he had it in him. And just because he was underperforming because of just trying to recover from injuries or whatever the case may be, to give up on him so quickly was really frustrating. It's one of those things where he has been quoted ever since then saying that they sold high on Jared McCain. And then you see McCain go to an excellent Oklahoma City team with a lot of guards and able to find a spot and flourish, be the type of player that we saw glimpses of last season. And to just say that you're selling high, that you didn't have room for him, when a team like Oklahoma City, which has tons of guards, tons of talent, was able to use him and utilize him, that was really frustrating.
So in addition to Morey being let go, in that same announcement, the Sixers said Nick Nurse will be back as head coach. Are you surprised about that?
A little bit surprised, because typically a GM will want to have their own coach. And maybe it's because it's the Sixers and they do things funny that maybe it wasn't such a surprise. They always do things in a weird way for some reason, but it isn't totally surprised, because you did see the guys play for Nick Nurse, especially towards the end, and for him to be able to help them orchestrate that comeback against the Celtics, that was really impressive to see, because I think many of us thought that they were just done against the Celtics. So not too surprised, but in a way also surprised.
So when it comes to replacing Morey, what route do you think they're going to go?
It's a good question. You know, do they go internal like an Elton Brand, who he's been the general manager, but to be the shot caller? Do they go with maybe more of an unknown type of name, or not as known, maybe an up-and-comer from some of the franchises like Oklahoma City, San Antonio, where there's been so much success when it comes to developing players? Do you give someone in that organization, you give them a shot? Bob Myers is the one making the decision, or at least making the recommendation to Josh Harris. Bob Myers, the four-time champion with the Golden State Warriors, he helped to develop that program into such a success that it was. I feel pretty good about him helping out in the decision-making process.
This franchise has done untold damage to your mental health over the last 10 years. What gives you hope that brighter days could be ahead?
You know, VJ Edgecombe and Tyrese Maxey, having that backcourt of the future is huge. So if it wasn't for them, you know, things would be really bleak here in Philadelphia when it comes to basketball. So you have Maxey, you have Edgecombe, you have draft picks, and you never know what's going to hit. If they get someone who they take a flyer on someone, he turns out to be a star, that would be huge. So I think there are potentially brighter days ahead because you have a foundation in Maxey and Edgecombe, and you have draft picks that you could potentially do something with. I personally would feel not good about attaching any of those picks to, let's say, Embiid or Paul George to try to get rid of their contracts, as difficult as those contracts are for team building, because those draft picks, I think, especially these days, are really valuable. You just never know what's going to hit.
All right. Thank you, Tim. KYW's Tim Jimenez joining us. We've got to step away. We've got more of this edition of The Week in Philly coming up right after this.
I'm excited to kind of show off Philadelphia golf, to have my extended family here as well as my closest friends and family.
This is awesome. I love playing golf. I love playing competitively, but getting to caddy is also such a great opportunity, and it's special, and I'm really grateful that I'm here.
Welcome back to The Week in Philly and the PGA Championship going on this weekend at Arana Mink Golf Club in Newtown Square. Golf fans from all over have descended on Delaware County to watch one of the top PGA tournaments. And over the last couple of weeks, we've done a lot of stories on the PGA Championship from all different angles. KYW's Justin Udo did a lot of the heavy lifting, and he joins us now with more. And Justin, you along with Mike Daugherty covered a ton of angles over the last couple of weeks. How much fun has this been for you, this assignment?
I can say this has been an absolute blast. It's given me so much insight into the different things that the PGA is doing and different things that the championship brings into the region. Just going up to Arana Mink for the last few days, I've been able to, you know, just talk to fans, get up close and personal with players, just really kind of take things in and see golf from a level that most people are never privileged to see. And it just makes it so cool. The only setback for me, Matt, is I probably spent a little more money than I probably should have at the pro shop.
This event out at Arana Mink in Newtown Square, a lot of talk coming in about the impact it was going to have economically for the area. People you've talked to throughout the week, the last couple of weeks, how big was having this for the Delaware County area?
It's big, and it's just another thing going on in the region this year that's really going to help the economy. I talked to the folks at Visit Delco, as well as the PGA people, who say, you know, when the championship comes to a region, it brings about $200 million in economic impact for that region. So they're expecting the same thing to be here in Delaware County in the Philadelphia region. And when you look at that, you're looking at hotels, you're looking at restaurants, you're looking at a number of different things, because although this is a captive and closed audience for the day, people coming in from around the world need hotels to stay. These staffs of hundreds, if not thousands, of chefs need places to be. They're putting a lot of people up in these hotels, and the people also want to have a little bit of leisure in their few hours they have outside of the course. So it really is bringing in a lot of money for the county.
Now, you did a lot of stories the last couple of weeks. One of them really stood out to me. A local golf pro who actually got the chance to be in the field of the PGA Championship. Tell me more about this.
That's right, Matt. Braden Shattuck, he's a Delaware County native, and he's a member of the Rolling Green Golf Club. He's playing in the tournament this week, and he's really excited about it. He kind of looks at it like going to a 9-to-5 job, because he gets to make that 40-minute drive to the course each day and then drive back each night and have dinner with his family and go to sleep in his own bed, something that most of these other players are not going to get a chance to do.
I'm excited to and humbled to be able to play against the best players in the world. They're going to come here to the Northeast, in my opinion, is the mecca of golf.
Whether his rounds are going well or not so well, you know, he kind of has that family backing with him. And he also has some friends and family that are coming out on the course to cheer him on. And he said, you know, some of the other golfers from around the world might be a little thrown by the Philly crowd, but he said it's something he's grown up with and something that he relishes in.
I'm used to the Philly people. I'm at a very Delco club, so I'm used to the people. I'm not worried about it at all. I think it might rustle some other feathers, but for me, it's just going to be another day.
How'd he earn the opportunity to play in the tournament?
Well, he won a few weeks ago in a big tournament out west, and that kind of secured his spot in getting into this tournament.
Now, you also did a story about a young student who got a chance to play a special role this week. What was happening there?
That's right. Just as amazing as Braden's story is, his caddies is even more amazing and very uncanny. His name is Beau Riviere, and he's a senior at Science Leadership Academy in Philadelphia. And the 18-year-old is probably the youngest caddy in the field, and he's caddying for Braden. And they have known each other for about 4 years.
It's fun. It's surreal. It's definitely a dream come true, and just trying to enjoy it as much as I can.
When I talked to Beau, he says, you know, it was about a little more than a year ago that he was getting some lessons from Braden. And Braden said, you know what, instead of paying me, why don't you caddy a tournament for me?
Nice part is when I call him over and I'm like, hey, Beau, I need a read here. Or, hey, I need your opinion. He's ready to go with information. I trust his opinion.
He said he caddied some tournaments for him. Braden did really well in those tournaments, and he asked him to come back and caddy for him in the PGA Championship.
That's great stuff. All right, thank you very much, Justin. KYW's Justin Udo joining us. We need to step away. We will have more of The Week in Philly coming up right after this.
We are kicking off Odunday Festival Week 2026. I'm so excited. We have some wonderful activities planned for everyone, and the headliner is going to knock everybody off their socks.
Final segment for this edition of The Week in Philly, and this week we got all the details about the 2026 Odunday Festival. And for more, let's bring in KYW's Shara Day Howard. And Shara, first off, for those who are unfamiliar, what is the Odunday Festival?
Ooh, I tell you, it is African festival. Oh my, it's pretty much the biggest thing you can get when it comes to street festivals. It's the largest of its kind in all of the nation, and it's right here in South Philadelphia. It's really about celebrating the African culture, ins and outs, all the things, but also the American culture. Let's not forget that.
Specifically, where will it be?
It'll be on 23rd Street and South, but really, it's about 15 blocks, so you can really just hit it with a pebble wherever you're from.
And when will it be?
It'll be June 7th through June 14th. That is the entire celebration, but the actual festival itself is on June 14th.
So tell us about some of the things that are on tap this year. It sounds like they've got a lot planned.
Yeah, oh, it's a smorgasbord, if you will. So Oshumbumi Fernandez-West is the CEO. She organized this whole thing, and she said, again, this year she wanted it bigger than ever. So for 7 days, you're going to have round tables, you're going to have artists, you're going to have pretty much anything you can think of in terms of celebration of a culture. So food, we're going to have street performers, but even a little FIFA action going on.
From fitness to our African Vibe event, to our African Business Roundtable, to our Caribbean Business Roundtable. Odunday, we are more than just a festival.
So on June 7th, all the fun begins. That's when you can get to your roundtables. You got to go to their website. Check out their week-long schedule. There's so much that she added this year. She just wants everyone to be included because this isn't just about African culture, but it's really about the 250th celebration of America. This is American culture.
Yeah, to that point, things that happen all the time or that people kind of count on year to year are bigger this year because of the 250th celebration. Is that the case here? Is this thing turbocharged? And are they expecting more people?
On steroids. I mean, they are really pumping it up this year, like everything else. But still, there's going to be a special something that she's got stored. The headliner, big stars, you know. I'm going to give it to you.
But our headliner this year is Belle Biv DeVoe. Yes.
Belle Biv DeVoe, 90s in the house. Anybody and everybody who knows hip hop knows Belle Biv DeVoe. They're going to be hitting the streets for Odunday.
So this is important for cultural reasons. It's important for fun reasons. But this also, I know when they had the event earlier this week kind of announcing everything, the city officials that were there were quick to point out that there's an economic impact in a positive way from this, too, as well.
Yes, yes, yes. Council President Kenyatta Johnson was there. He's from South Philadelphia. That's his stomping ground. So he said he will always be supportive because it's a kind of a twofer. It's an economic impact of over $30 million, he said, but also it's a cultural impact. You can't forget that.
African-American culture is American culture. But together, we move our city forward and our country forward. So we have to continue celebrating Odunday, but also the cultural aspect.
And once again, what were the dates?
The dates are June 7th, it all begins, the fun, all the way to June 14th, which is the day of the street festival.
All right, thank you very much, Shara. That is KYW's Sharon A. Howard joining us, and that is going to do it for this edition of The Week in Philly from KYW News Radio, sponsored by your Delaware Valley Honda dealers. Get a deal you'll like on a Honda you'll love. This week's episode was produced by Sabrina Boyd-Circa and Brian Seltzer. My name is Matt Leon. Thanks so much for listening, and enjoy the rest of your weekend.